As we start this morning, I actually want to start with a story. It's kind of a famous story. It's a little bit of a cliche story, but it fits for us this morning. I invite you to turn your Bibles to the book of 2 Kings, chapter 6. And for many of you, this is going to be a familiar story, but let's take a moment and visualize this together. Looking at the book of 2 Kings, chapter 6. And I'm going to read from 2 Kings chapter 6, starting at verse 8. Second Kings chapter 6, verse 8 says, "Now the king of Aram was at war with Israel. After conferring with his officers, he said, 'I will set up my camp in such and such a place.'" He's going to move his army. "The man of God," that's Elisha at this time, "the man of God sent word to the king of Israel, 'Beware of passing that place, because the Arameans are going down there.' So the king of Israel checked on the place indicated by the man of God. Time and again, Elisha warned the king so that he was on his guard in such places. This enraged the king of Aram. He summoned his officers and demanded of them, 'Tell me, which of us is on the side of the king of Israel? Who is the snitch? Who is the spy among us?' 'None of us, my lord the king,' said one of his officers. 'But Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, he tells the king of Israel the very words you speak in your bedroom.' 'Go, find out where he is,' the king ordered, 'so I can send men and capture him.' The report came back: 'He is in Dothan.' Then he sent horses and chariots and a strong force there. They went by night, surrounded the city. When the servant of the man of God," so that's Elisha's servant, "he got up and went out early the next morning, an army with horses and chariots had surrounded the city. 'Oh no, my lord, what shall we do?' the servant asked. 'Don't be afraid,' the prophet answered. 'Those who are with us are more than those who are with them.' And Elisha prayed, 'Open his eyes, Lord, so that he may see.' Then the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked and saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha." Perhaps you've heard this story before. It's a great image. Because you have this scene where the servant, probably a young man, probably in his teens, serving Elisha, the man of God, and he wakes up in the morning one day and he sees that his enemies, the enemies of the Arameans, have surrounded the city that they are at. And he's freaking out, and he says to the man of God, he says to Elisha, "What are we going to do? What are we going to do?" And Elisha says, "Relax. Relax. Chill out." He says, "Watch this." And he says, "God, open up the eyes of my young servant." So the eyes, you can imagine the scales just come back. The blinders come off. And he sees this army of fire. That's going to be the army of angels, okay? The God is the Lord of hosts, the Lord of armies. And all of a sudden, he sees out around them God's armies, which were at one moment before were invisible to the servant, maybe even invisible to Elisha himself. But Elisha knew, "I'm not afraid. You don't need to be afraid, because look out, and there are armies there." How many times do we encounter situations where if we could just see that God has protected us already, we would enter that situation differently? In our house, for example, we have an upstairs and a downstairs. And the children's room, they share a room, it's upstairs. Cindy in my room is downstairs. And so we'll tell them, "Hey, can you go upstairs and get your whatever it is? Maybe a change of clothes, a pair of socks. Go up to your, Jacob has a blanket. Go upstairs and get your blanket. It's upstairs." I don't want to. Why not? Because it's far away. Not, no, it's not far. It's right there. It's dark. Yeah? Turn on the lights. It's scary. And then, you know, depending on my mood, okay, let's be honest. Sometimes, just go, okay? And sometimes it's, oh, let's use this as a teaching moment, okay? God, whom you believe in, is stronger than any enemies. Oh, there are no enemies, but if there were, God is stronger than those enemies, okay? God will protect you. I can't see God. Oh, man. Okay, you got me. You're right, but he's there. Let's go together. You can see me, okay? Partly, I just don't want to go upstairs. I'm tired. I don't want to go. I'll stand here at the bottom of the stairs and wait. How many times do we wish that we just had that perspective, that God would open up our eyes to see the end from the beginning, to see how things are going to play out? You know, we encounter both good and bad, and for whatever reason, we naturally assume if it's bad, something's wrong. And if it's good, we encounter something good. We always assume, oh, this is God's blessing in our lives. Always. And I think to myself, is that always true? That bad things are, something's wrong, and good things are always God's blessing? We make these kinds of snap judgments about these things, and we sort of then extrapolate from our circumstances how we must be doing with God. If good things happen, we get a job, we get a good grade, we get a bonus, we were speeding, and the cop said, okay, I'm going to let you off with a warning. Oh, I must be right with God because he let me go. Little did I forget that I was speeding in the first place, and therefore I was wrong with God. So which is it? Am I right with God or am I wrong with God? We make these judgments in the moment. And I'm going to tell you that when you do that, you are prone to get it wrong. It's going to happen. You're going to make a mistake. One thing you think was bad turns out to be great, and then you learn a lesson. Oh, wow, God, really? God doesn't, it's not always bad. Something good happens in your life, and it turns out to be awful. It turns out to be sour. It turns out with a bad end. So, wow, I thought it was such a good thing. I guess it's not a good thing. And the reason that we encounter this difficulty is because we don't have perspective. We don't have that eternal view. We're not looking at the end from the beginning. We're just looking at right now what's in front of us. This servant of God, this servant, Elisha's servant, he only saw what was right in front of him, and what was right in front of him was no army. And Elisha said, relax, let me give you a moment, let me show you through the power of God an eternal perspective, a spiritual perspective. That's what we want. And I'm going to tell you this morning that that's what Kohelet tells us is what we need to have. If you would turn your Bibles back to Ecclesiastes chapter 7, remember now, we're learning from Kohelet. Kohelet is the author of Ecclesiastes. He's our wise sage. He's our bearded guru sitting on his chair, gathering his children and his grandchildren. And he says, come to me, children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Let me tell you about what is wise. Let me tell you about what is good. Last week, Kohelet told us, death is good. Strange. Strange that he would say that. Tomorrow, I have to drive to Los Angeles early in the morning to try to get there by noon because one of my good friends, his father died. His father died suddenly, and my friend, I don't see Nolan here. Nolan has already left. It's public, it's not like a secret, but it is, if you guys know Nolan has a sister, Brenda. Brenda's husband, Felix, is my friend. Felix's father died. So I've got to go down tomorrow. Can you imagine telling him, hey, death is good? Because Kohelet says death is good. That's what he says, right? Chapter 7, verse 1, the day of death better than the day of birth. How is that possible that death is good? we learned last week, or 2 weeks ago now, death is good because it gives us perspective. Death, in and of itself, is terrible. It's awful. People cry at funerals for a reason. And it's okay to cry. It's okay to mourn. I'm expecting to mourn tomorrow. The funeral that I'm going to is the same place my own parents are buried at. So after the funeral, I'm going to go spend some time visiting the gravesite of my parents. I'm expecting to mourn because death's terrible. But Kohelet says that death is good. Death is good because death gives perspective. Death allows you to start to think about what is really important. It changes the way you process. It changes your value system. If you have a brush with death, people who have a brush with death, a near-death incident, if you're in a car accident, I was in a car accident when I was 23. I was sideswiped by a car in the rain on the freeway, and I spun out on the freeway. Woo, hydroplaned. This was on 880 in Hayward. And I spun out, and I went across all the lanes of the freeway, and God at the moment sent the armies of Israel to clear open a path so I didn't hit any other cars. All the way across, and I came to rest into a police car that was on the side of the road already. They were clearing an accident. I kid you not. And I know I was in shock. I wasn't hurt because my coin drawer popped open and all the coins were out. And I thought to myself, I'm facing oncoming traffic at the moment. I thought to myself, this is a mess. I need to clean up the coins because they're going to come and see this mess. And I start picking up the coins. And I thought, what am I doing? I couldn't think straight. I had a near death. Not really, but it was scary. Oh, and after that, Cindy, I love you. You know, can I just get a hug? We should get married now, you know. Let's do it. I know we just dated 2 months. It's okay. You're the one. I know it. Changes you. Changes your perspective. It does. Kohelet knows it. He says that death is better. Then he comes in verse 7, and we're going to look from verse 7 to verse 14. And I'm going to tell you right now that initially these are somewhat confusing, but I hope, hopefully by the end of our time, they won't be. Verse 7, he says, extortion turns a wise person into a fool, and a bribe corrupts the heart. The end of a matter is better than its beginning, and patience is better than pride. Do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools. Let's stop right there for a moment. Three verses. Three verses that are all saying very much the same thing, although in somewhat of a cryptic way. He says, extortion turns a wise person into a fool, and a bribe corrupts the heart. I'm going to tell you right now, these three verses, 7, 8, and 9, all say the same thing, which is, having a long view of things, a long view, dare I say, an eternal view of things, is better than having a short-term view of things. In other words, if you are only concerned with today and tomorrow and this weekend and the end of the month, Kohelet says that's a foolish way of thinking. You need to think long-term. When we talk about Stephanie and I, we talk in church about ministry. We don't talk about in months. We don't even talk about in years. Let's think in decades. Let's think in 5 to 10 year chunks of time. Let's try to have as long of a view as possible. And Kohelet says that here in 7, 8, 9. The long view is better. It says in verse 7, extortion is bad, okay? Very simple. Extortion's bad and bribes are bad. How is that about long view versus short view? You see, this is in the political arena. And extortion, we kind of know the idea of extortion. We see it on TV. Extortion is, I have something that I want from you. I'm not getting it. I am lacking something. But I have something over you. I have some piece of information I have power, I have influence. So I'm going to use my power and my influence to extort what I want from you. I cannot wait for it. I want it now. So I do it by means of extortion. What's a bribe? A bribe is when there is no power play involved. I don't have power over you, but I have money. I still want something from you, and I don't want to wait. So I'm going to get it by bribing you. Both of these things involve the same kind of sentiment. I need something. I want something. I don't want to wait. I'm going to do bad things to get it from you. And Kohelet says, extortion, bribe, those are bad. Those are people not being patient, not taking the long view, only focusing on the here and now. He says in verse 9, skipping verse 8 for a moment, do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools. Do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools. The key word in this verse is the word quickly. Again, he says, when you have only a short view, a short-term view, you're only looking right at the immediate circumstances. When bad things happen, you react with anger. It makes you angry. He says, don't be quickly angered. Anger resides in the heart of fools. Take time to think through. You know, this is what they teach children. Some of you who have little kids, there is a television show that my kid used to watch. My kids used to watch, not so much. They're too old for it now. It's called Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. You know what Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood is? It's based off of Mr. Rogers, which was back in our day. Daniel Tiger, he has a song. And the song says, I even wrote the language here. Here we go. When you feel so mad and you want to roar, take a deep breath and count to four. One, two, three, four. Why? What is that? What does that even mean? It means when you want to react, take a moment. Take a moment. Any decision, any word that you say that comes out of your mouth in that moment of anger, I guarantee you will not be what you actually mean. It won't be. It'll be tinged with emotion. It'll be tainted with just heat, the heat of the moment. How many times in your life have you said something to your spouse, to your mom, to your dad, when you're angry, and you look back and you say, I didn't mean that. Have you ever told your mom or dad, be honest, have you ever said to them the words, I hate you? I did. I didn't mean it. But man, at that moment I felt it because I didn't get X, Y, and Z, whatever it was. I don't even remember. I remember saying the words though. Did I hate my father at that time? Yeah, for like 2 minutes. And then afterwards, oh, the weight of guilt was all over my heart. I loved my dad. I didn't hate him. Any words you say in the moment of heat, in the moment of anger, they're not good. So I would recommend to you, Kohelet would recommend to you, when you're angry, shut up. Don't say anything. Wait. Count to four. One, two, three, four. Okay. It's not I hate you. It's I'm very upset with you. I feel hate in my heart for you, but it's not real. Even Daniel Tiger knows that. Kohelet says, don't be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools. Kohelet tells you, have the long view, patience, patience. And really where he encapsulates this idea is in verse 8. That's why I skipped it. The end of a matter is better than its beginning. And patience is better than pride. Two different verses here. The first one is very simple. It's better to be at the end of something than at the beginning. Because at the end of something, you see the whole picture. I'm always of a proponent. If you want to go and figure out how God has blessed you in your life, do not take stock of your life right now. It's an uninformed, the story hasn't yet been written kind of a view. When you talk about blessing in your life, always look backwards. Look back, reflection, introspection, meditation of the years that have gone by. Then you can see clearly what I thought was a curse, what I thought was a punishment, actually wove its way, meandered through the woods, and eventually it was a blessing. It was a blessing. At the moment, though, it didn't feel good. The end is always better than the beginning. And this is why spiritual people who are toward the end of life, they see things more clearly. Those who are in the front end of life, we just don't see it as clearly. And a lot of times, though, the problem is when you're in the beginning of life, you don't really want to hear from those people. And when you're at the end of life, all you want to do is just vomit your wisdom on the kids, okay? Just that. And they don't want to hear it. This becomes the disconnect. But Kohelet says, the end is always better than the beginning. Because at the end, you see the whole picture. And then finally, this one is a little bit hard to understand. Patience better than pride. Just a quick slide here. The long view. Patience is actually this Hebraic expression, the length of spirit. Length of spirit. We talk a lot about this idea of length in the Old Testament when God says that, when the psalmist will say of God, he is a patient God. They always use this Hebrew expression. He is long. He has the length of his nose. It's very funny. Why the nose? The nose, God's nose is very long. You would think in sort of Western culture, a long nose is a what? Is a liar. No. See, in Hebrew, a long-nosed person is a patient person. I think the idea, and this is kind of partly my guess, partly I think I've read it somewhere. You know, when you're angry, you do this. You breathe in through your nose. Okay, well, see, God's nose is really long, and for whatever reason, that's a good thing, okay? Short-nosed people, which is really Chinese people, okay? Short-nosed people, we get angry very quickly. Long-nosed people, God, do Chinese people have anger problems? It could be a biological thing. Just saying. Beware, if you marry Chinese, I mean, this happens. God is long-nosed. Here, God is long of spirit. And not God, I'm sorry. Kohelet tells us to be long of spirit. Patience is long of spirit. It speaks of length. If you think of a graph, you have your y-axis and your x-axis. Is that right? In your x-axis, and it's long. It's like this. It's long and trajectory and straight, and he says patience is long of spirit. Pride, however, is height of spirit. It's pride because it's kind of like it's translated in the New American Standard as haughtiness of spirit. And so it comes out as pride, but really what he's trying to make a comparison is the long view versus the spike view, okay? You see, this height of spirit, in this particular case, something good happens and your spirit gets, look at me, I'm so good, I should be praised because of my accomplishment. And so you have this spike in your attitude. Go back to anger, quickly provoked in your anger, that is also a spike. He could say the same thing in terms of bad things. Take the long view. Not the spiked view. Kohelet says in these three verses, the long view, the long perspective of life, and really what is the longest perspective? The longest perspective is eternity. That's the perspective we're supposed to have. That's the perspective that leads to wisdom and good choices.
He says, this is what I've learned through my life. I would imagine that Kohelet has made decisions. And he also, Kohelet's a smart guy. He probably also has also considered the people that have gone before him, like his father David, made a couple of times the short view. And he messed up. Let me gratify my desire now. And he messed up. And Solomon says, I see it. I see it all the time. I see it in my own life. And at the end of the whole life, you can look back and you can say, when I took the long view, when I stepped back to count to four, one, two, three, four. When I waited a day before I responded in my anger, when I waited a day, when I waited a week to let the anger subside, let the thoughts sort of settle, let me formulate my thoughts, what really is about the thing that makes me upset, rather than react in anger with a short nose, that gets me in trouble. And Kohelet says, in all these three different verses, the long view is always better than the short view. The long play is always better than the short play. We're going to keep going here. We've got about 7 minutes. But I want to finish up verses 10 to 14 because this is what happens, all right? I've just told all you young people, y'all are foolish. Because you don't think the long view. Your parents, your grandparents, we see some grandparents here. See, they see the long view. Okay? And they're going to say when you get home, you can, I told you. You see? Did you listen to Eddie Musa? Did you listen this morning? I'm right, and you're foolish. The long view is always better than the short view. And then you're going to say to them, pay attention. But grandma, grandpa, verse 10 says, you see, this is the counterpoint. Do not say, this is the old people saying this, why were the old days better than these? For it is not wise to ask such questions. Wisdom, like an inheritance, is a good thing and benefits those who see the sun. Wisdom is a shelter, as money is a shelter. But the advantage of knowledge is this: wisdom preserves those who have it. Consider what God has done. Who can straighten what he has made crooked? When times are good, be happy. But when times are bad, consider this: God has made the one as well as the other. Therefore, no one can discover anything about their future. You see, I think at this point, Kohelet realizes that if you just take 7, 8, and 9, and you just focus on what 7, 8, and 9 are saying, 7, 8, and 9 are saying the end of the older folks have a better perspective than the younger folks, because older folks take much more of a long view, younger folks are much more hasty in their decisions. That's sort of generally true. What happens is, though, that older folks automatically think, just because I am old, I am wise. And what they will end up saying is this in verse 10. Why were the old days better than this? I'm telling you right now, I have said that. And I don't think I'm old. I'm sort of in the middle, I guess. Boy, when I was a kid, I rode my bike to school by myself. Can't do that now. When I was a kid, I walked to school by myself. Can't do that all the day. Oh, I'm lamenting. Oh, how bad the days are today. When I was a kid, I never did what you used to do. See, old people can have that tendency to just rely on their age and say that because I'm old, I'm wise. And he says here, that's actually not the case, because when you take that attitude, what you end up doing is you just keep comparing today with yesterday. And you keep, there's always this view of yesterday was better. When I was a child, I was better, times were better. Today, you're worse, times are worse. I think to myself, you know, comparing just one generation, one grouping, one demographic between how old I am in my 40s and those who are in their 20s. And we talk about, again, I'm not going to belabor this, but we talk about the millennials. Oh, the millennials. Millennial this, millennial that. Oh, it's the me generation. Have you heard that before? It's the generation me. Let me post on social media what I'm doing. This generation is so self-centered, so narcissistic, so self-absorbed. And I would simply say to myself, you're a fool if you think that this generation is any more self-centered than you. The only difference is they have a public outlet for their narcissism. They are narcissistic, don't get me wrong. But so are we. And so are you. Everybody is, to a certain degree, self-absorbed, self-concerned. The only difference is you can see their self-absorption very plainly. Okay? Look what I'm wearing to school today. Look at my socks. Look at my shoes. Look how I tie my shoes today. I mean, really? They have a form for it, though, where we never did. Not in the same way. Kohelet says, don't think for a moment somehow that the days today are somehow just so much worse than the days. This is what he says in verse 10. Don't say, why were the old days better than these? It's not wise to ask such questions. And then skipping down to verse 13, consider what God has done. Who can straighten what he has made crooked? We talk about this idea of crooked. We've already seen this word crooked earlier in Ecclesiastes, and he has used this word to describe the world. He says, the world is crooked, and you're not going to straighten it. It has always been crooked. It will continue to be crooked. You need to understand that. Wise people understand that. That nothing has changed over the days. That you, as an old person, were just as selfish and foolish as your children and grandchildren. And if you can appreciate that and understand that, then maybe you might be able to restore more quickly your child or grandchild who makes a mistake. Maybe you might be able to extend a little bit more patience. Maybe you might be able to step back and take count to four when you're angry. One, two, three, four. And say to yourself, I'm angry at what happened, but I did the same thing when I was a kid. Ultimately, Kohelet says, when times are good, be happy. When times are bad, consider this. God has made the one as well as the other. Therefore, no one can discover anything about their future. This is, again, you take the long view. You take the long view. The long view is always better than the short view. The long reaction is always better than the short reaction. And really, if we extend it out even farther, what's the long view? The long view is not just at the end of my life. The long view is to look to the forever, to eternity. Once you start talking like that, when you start saying, I need to make decisions in my life based on an eternal perspective, on a long-term perspective. When I start making decisions like that, Kohelet says, this is when you make good decisions. Now, frankly speaking, I think to myself, once a week you come to church. If in the 40 minutes that I'm speaking to you, for 40 minutes, we are encouraged to think about the long view, eternal things, spiritual things, for 40 minutes, once a week, to recalibrate ourselves, to think about eternal things, that's a good use of our time. Because out in the world, you're not encouraged to think that way. You only think what's right in front of you. That's what we do. This is what people do. You think about today, getting through today, and then what have we got going on tomorrow? If once a week we come here and we listen to the words of Kohelet or whoever it is that encourage us to think eternally, that's a good use of our time. Kohelet says it's that eternal view that's always going to be expressed in wisdom. Let's pray. Our Heavenly